Today is November 2nd, 2016, and this is episode number 383 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a proud bull. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACMMacObserver.com.
Giddy up. I've always been a big fan of the stock show, which is kind of weird because I'm allergic to horses. Should I just play the outro music right now?
Oh, I don't know what the hell we should do here. Can I say hell?
Sure.
All right. Sweet.
Yeah. Aren't you glad I'm an empowering person?
You are in so many ways. For instance, you're able to find things on the internet that I can't find sometimes.
I have serious Google foo.
You do. You do, in fact, have serious Google foo. All right. Let's see here. This is the Apple Context Machine. Is that the one we're doing?
Hold on. Let me look at our presets. Yes, we're doing Apple Context Machine.
Star ratings.
Oh, yeah.
Star ratings, they're back.
They
will be.
Well, for me, they're back.
Right. Right.
So, you've been ranting for a little while about how in iOS 10, you can't do the star rating things on your iPhone or iPad for songs. You just get like or don't like. And, yeah, you've ranted to the point where I would almost classify it as waxing poetic about how unhappy you are about losing star ratings for songs.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. And that's because I've got years of star rating data where I've rated my songs. I use those star ratings for playlists. For smart playlists. Mm-hmm. And I made that investment because Apple gave me those tools. So, yeah, I was, and so were other star rating adherents, cranky when Apple took away the bulk of those tools. Because that makes me mad. I'm cranky because it makes me mad. Go figure.
All right. I just thought maybe you're cranky because you're having like cramps or I don't know.
Well, you know, where is the Brian equivalent? But
spit it out.
With iOS 10, shut up. I'm getting there. With iOS 10 and iTunes 12.5, star ratings were all but deprecated. In iOS 10, they were deprecated. They were just gone. Like you could still have a smart playlist loaded up if you were doing it from iTunes. You could have a smart playlist based on your star ratings, but you can't see your star ratings in iOS 10 or 10.1. And with iTunes 12.5. You can see star ratings only in song view, not in any other view. And you can edit them you can show them in song view. The only other way to see them in any other view is to do a get info on a particular song. And then you can see and edit the star rating for that particular song.
All right. So this tells me Apple really isn't into star ratings anymore, and they don't want you to be into star ratings either.
Correct. This was part of John Keats' rant about how Apple hates people who want to own their own music.
So you're rating them wrong.
Right. You're rating them wrong. Because that's actually exactly it. Because Apple switched instead to the very social media friendly heart or no heart.
Yeah, so it's a very binary thing. It's you like the song or not.
Right. Which is, I don't know, that just doesn't even cut it for me. Doesn't even Don't even come close to cutting it for me.
Well, it doesn't even give you a way to not like a song.
Correct. You can't dislike a song. You can't give a song a 1-star rating, for instance. And this has implications. For one thing, of course, there are songs I don't. If I like a song, mm-hmm. not all likes are created equally.
Yeah,
right. There are songs that I like and there are songs that I love, for instance, just to keep it extremely simple. Like, the way I tend to do stuff, songs I absolutely love would get a 5-star rating and songs that I liked a lot would get a 4-star rating. And then I had a 4- and 5-star playlist. Mm-hmm. And then I had a 5-star playlist and I used those playlists differently. I like, for instance, on a road trip, I liked my 4- and 5-star playlist. When I'm writing fiction out in a coffee shop, I like my 5-star playlist. Mm-hmm. That's the way I'm wired. That's how I was using it, and I liked using it that way. So a binary like or dislike thing is not nuanced enough for me. It is social media friendly for sure. You know, folks like their hearts and their likes.
Yes, but even Facebook has expanded that out to include other things too, like angry, sad,
right?
Ish.
That's yeah, right. And I could see how people would have been using I was definitely using the iTunes star ratings in a pretty straightforward fashion, but now. Someone who is a little bit less literal could have made 1-star running songs and 2 stars reading songs.
Oh my God, that's brilliant.
3 stars sex songs.
Wait, hold on. Which one is? Okay, I had to write down 3 again. Okay, got it. Carry on.
4 stars, maybe. Thinking songs, whatever, right? I mean, the point is that you with 5 choices, 1 through 5, or actually really 0 through 5, so 6 choices, one has the option of doing a lot of different things. With the binary system, you don't. And the really annoying thing is that with the binary system, every song that you haven't actually rated is exactly the same as a song that you have designated or not designated, a song that you don't like.
Right. That's, to me, that's a problem right there.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's just not useful. And it's weird that the data still existed, but we just couldn't see it. That's weird. That's weird to me. It's weird and annoying. And here's the other thing for me. And again, we're all wired differently, right? I realize that the way I do things doesn't necessarily apply to everyone else. The vast majority of my song ratings were done in coffee shops while I was writing fiction.
Okay.
Because the way I'm wired, when I'm at my desk and I'm writing nonfiction, i.e. the Mac Observer, I don't listen to music. I can't listen to music when I'm writing nonfiction. And when I'm writing fiction, I kind of need to listen to music. And so not only can I not see the data or tweak it, I can't add to it. And this is an iOS 10 and 10.1. So this forms the foundation of my own ranting. Apple had something that was quite functional, quite good, quite doable, something that probably most people don't do. I would posit that the fact that Apple took star ratings away means that Apple's own data says that not many of us use them.
That makes sense.
But those of us who do use them like it. More importantly, I want to emphasize this again. Apple gave us these tools, so we use them, those of us who use them. Mm-hmm. And we made that investment, that mental investment, not to mention the time investment. We made that investment because we were trusting Apple to not screw us.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
So this is part of why I was cranky.
Yeah. So in a loose sense, you almost felt betrayed by Apple because they took away your star ratings.
Sure. Yeah. Probably some of that, at least.
See, now I'm playing therapist.
Yeah, that's fine. That's, you know me well.
Wait. No, I did that wrong. Brian, how did that make you feel? I really need to work on my therapist.
Kid, do you have a doll so I can show you where it hurt?
Yes. Yes, I do.
So this forms the basis of my crankiness. This is why I was cranky. Again, our listeners, some of them will have no empathy or sympathy and are just shouting at their speakers, you know, stop your whining. And that's fine. I get it.
Yeah. They're yelling things like first world problem, Brian.
Exactly. And I get it. I get it. This is very, you know, this is very much about me and about what I wanted from iTunes and from music. And,
well, music, to be fair, is a very personal thing.
It is a very personal thing. But here's another thing too. The what about like genius recommendations? Mm-hmm. And people who like this, like that. Well, you know, a binary system is less useful than a 5-star system. Yes. So, all right. So anyway, apparently in iOS 10.2, at least in the beta that's out right now, star ratings are back in the music app in iOS 10.2.
I'm going to be mostly pedantic and say that you didn't need to use the word apparently, because iTunes star ratings are in the beta of iOS 10.2.
They are in the beta. The apparently, if you really want to go down the pedantic the rabbit hole with me, I will jump first. The apparently was an acknowledgement that they may go away. They're there now, but they may go away. Just because it's in the beta at this point does not mean it's going to be in the final release of iOS 10.2.
Okay, well, as long as we're going down the rat hole, you still didn't need apparently, or you used apparently incorrectly, because the star ratings are, in fact, in 10.2, but we don't know if they will be there once 10.2 is no longer in beta.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and stand by. I think I'm gonna stand behind my usage.
Well, that's okay. I will let you do that, and you'll just have to live with the fact that you're wrong. But the point right now isn't that you're wrong. It's that the star ratings are back for now.
So far, yeah,
right.
For now, they're back, and it's interesting too because the implementation is kind of crappy. I'm being generous.
It's almost like a passive aggressive move on Apple's part where they're like, oh, you want star ratings? Here's your fracking star ratings.
All right, so firstly, it's an option. Again, so far in 10.2. Mm-hmm. The current version, it's an option. So you actually have to turn star ratings on in your music settings, under settings. So settings, arrow, music. It's on that first page, right?
Oh, jeez, Brian. Okay, people, tap settings, scroll down to music, tap music, and then you'll see the setting there.
Yeah, right. What he said. Thank you.
Man, how do you get through the day?
It's a good question, actually. It's a really good question. So where were we? What were we talking about?
We're talking about the star ratings are an option and not just simply there, which is also kind of interesting because Apple is not really into giving us options.
Well, Apple's also not usually into giving us things back that they took away. So, I mean, I love the fact that Apple listened to, again, what is probably a fairly small subset of its users who are cranky about the loss of this functionality, and they're giving it back to us. I appreciate that.
I think it's great too. And I'm fully expecting someone to say, well, if Steve Jobs were alive, this wouldn't happen. That's not what he did. And if that's what you're thinking, then you have probably forgotten about the time that Apple took away the controls for the little slide switch on the side of the iPad. So you couldn't choose right. between rotation, lock, or mute. They made it only a mute to match the iPhone, and people freaked their crap out, and Apple changed it back, and that was under Steve Jobs.
Right, and of course it's gone now, but whatever.
Yeah, well, another passive-aggressive move. They just took the switch away.
They just took the switch away.
How do you feel yeah. about that now, people, huh? You happy now? Did you get what you want?
I did. I like that switch, too. But, yeah.
I missed the switch.
So, all right, so it's an option, which is interesting because, again, user interface, things like that are usually not options, but it's an option. And that to me is a perfectly excellent and fine compromise. Mm-hmm. But the way that they're actually implemented in the user interface is that's the part that's really crappy.
Yeah, it's really crappy.
So first of all, they're hidden in the share screen.
Right. And most people can't even figure out how to get there. I mean, it took me a while to remember that when I was in the music app, the song that's currently playing is in a light gray bar at the bottom of the window. And when I swiped up on that, I was like, oh, right. There's all this other stuff in here.
Right. But and that, is that where the share screen is?
Yeah.
Or you still have to tap share. You pull up on that bar, and in the sheet that slides up, there is a share, link, text link.
Right.
And, or is it a share text link, or is it the page with the up arrow on it? I'm not running 10, but I'm not actually running 10.2.
Oh, let's take a look. Let me hop over to the music app real quick. And if I swipe up on the currently playing song, okay, so now I have my music controls, and so that includes the album art, how far we are into the song title and album, the play pause button, volume, and my little output button so that I can choose to play through my speakers built in or through other speakers. Then you have the ellipsis thing off to the right.
Right. Okay.
When you tap that, that's when you get other options like remove the song, add it to a playlist, create a station. Your share song option is there. You can get it lyrics. And then, assuming you have enabled song ratings, that's what you'll see there too. And you still see the love. Oh, and a dislike button. So we right. have to retract part of what we said. You actually can not like a song.
That's new, though, right?
I don't know, because I gave up on love and dislike a long time ago, and song ratings, because it was just a pain to get at everything.
Yeah, it's a good thing we went ahead and did our research ahead of time.
Yeah, well, you know, we are on top of this. We are top men.
All right, I'm checking, because I'm running 10.1 on this device. Jerry the Junker by the Asylum Street Spankers, one of my favorite Austin bands, or at least the old version of that band.
You've told me about them.
No, you can dislike.
Yeah. Okay.
So, okay. Yeah. So yeah.
So basically, all that stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff I said earlier. That's wrong.
Yeah. By the way, I've been listening to "Is You Ain't My Baby" from B.B. King.
That is a good cover of that tune.
Yeah. B.B. King, he was an awesome artist.
Okay, my device is muted yet. Yeah, it's playing.
Yeah, that's because it mutes alerts. It doesn't mute your music.
Yeah, it's fantastic. All right, that's great.
All right, so it's a good thing. All right.
So swipe up from the bottom of your screen, swipe from right to left so that you can get at your iTunes controls, and then you can pause this one.
Yeah, yeah, I did that. All right, so good.
See,
all right,
the reason I did that, Brian, was to sneak in a tip for our listeners.
Oh, that's nice of you. Yeah. That's nice of you. So when in 10.2, when you're on this screen, mm-hmm. you get one of your options. If you've enabled star ratings, would be rate my song, rate this song.
Hold on. Let me hop back there and I'll give you the exact wording. Rate song.
Rate song. When you tap that, you get a popover sheet that the displays your current rating and allows you to modify it.
Okay. Now here's part of how lame this is, because when you're looking at the rate song option, mm-hmm. it always shows a single star unless you tap on it to see what you've actually rated a song as.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's crazy. Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. So instead of right beside rate song where you could see up to 5 stars, you always have 1 star.
Unless you already rated.
No, if you've rated it, it always shows whether or not you have rated a song. The rate song option has a single star.
Okay, well, let's hope that that's a beta feature that'll actually be fixed.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's plenty of room to show all 5 stars there.
Right. But it takes 2 taps to actually get to this.
It takes a lot more than 2 taps.
It takes 3 taps to get to it, because once you see the star, then you have to tap again.
Yeah, you also have to do a swipe and taps. And yeah, this does not meet my standards for economy of motion in an iOS app.
Okay, but here's the funny thing. Uh-huh. Here's the funny thing. Apple is like the master abusive spouse, because they've treated us so bad on this particular issue, right? By taking these star ratings away, mm-hmm. that when we got any of it back, it's like, oh, thank you. Oh, thank you, Apple. Thank you so much. Oh, thank you so much. At least that's how I was. I was just like super stoked. I said, oh my God, this is awesome. Like, star ratings are back. Yay. But you know, and really mm-hmm. it's just painfully implemented, but at least they're back.
Yeah, that's true. At least they're back.
So, yeah. So, bottom line is, I'm pleased that Apple has brought them back.
You would be more pleased if they brought them back in a more functional way.
Yes, I would be more pleased if yes. You know, like something I wanted in iOS 9 and maybe even 8, I forget when this went away, is I really want to actually be able to see all the star ratings on a song. Like if I'm looking at an album, I want to see all of the ratings for every song in the list of songs next to the name of the song. I want to see my star ratings. I want to see it. I want to be able to edit it right then and there. Is that too much? Is that too much to ask?
Well, based on what we have for new interface today, I'm going to guess yes, but it doesn't feel like it should be too much to ask. Mm-mm.
What's our time?
We're at 23 minutes and 45 seconds.
Because that feels like a killer segue to the next topic.
You know what I think we should do before the next topic?
What's that?
I'm totally putting you on the spot because mail just crashed for me.
Excellent.
We got a listener comment about the show.
When?
It was a couple of days ago.
To acm@macobserver.com?
No, Dave forwarded it to you, to both of us.
Oh, the review we got on iTunes.
Yes, we got a review.
All right. So I am looking that up. We did get a review. We got a very nice review. Great pie. This is from Ken Yeezy.
Hey, Ken.
Must be a big Kanye fan. But hey, Ken. Great podcast, he said, with a good dose of comic value. Thank you kindly. I'm not sure why people leave looks ratings. Guessing that's an autocorrect.
Damn you, autocorrect.
Yeah. Anyway, I love the interacting between the two podcasters. They tell it like it is without being distasteful. I'm always looking forward to new podcasts. That is very, very, very kind of you to say.
And also very generous, because I think we are quite often distasteful.
We're certainly goobers.
There is that.
You should, everyone should go, and if you hate us, if you love us, whatever, go leave us a review on the iTunes.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, give us a star rating, because you can do that.
It's one place where you can still do star ratings.
You can still do star rating. You can. It's so crazy. Why would you be able to rate apps and podcasts and not rate songs? This is what we do. We like to rate our music. I mean, like, all right.
Anyhow.
So listen, second topic. Chuck,
wait.
Yeah.
Thanks for the email. Or thanks for the rating. You sir,
oh, yeah.
Rock.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Even if Brian just blew you off, I still appreciate the fact that you rated the show.
Man, golly, I always really wondered what the underside of a Greyhound looked like.
Yeah, watch out for the oil leaks.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So,
hey, second topic.
Second topic is Chuck von Rosbach. What do you think? Is that a good pronunciation?
I think it's a great pronunciation. So Chuck wrote in saying, No,
he's a science fiction author and Apple fan. He blogs about Apple a lot, writes about Apple. Mm-hmm. He always has interesting opinions. I'm always interested to see what Chuck has to say. He was recently on Background Mode, John Martellaro's Background Mode, being interviewed.
Oh, that's right.
We should put a link to that in the show notes. We should
totally do that.
He wrote a piece, and I'm trying to pull it up because, you know, top men here.
Right.
He wrote a piece about people kvetching about the new MacBook Pros.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good piece. I thought it was insightful.
Yeah, it was, and he had one particular line that got me thinking, and that line, because he basically is saying that the complaints about the new MacBook Pro are much ado about nothing, and I certainly have a lot of empathy with that. But he said a lot of it boils down to this concept. This is a quote: "We demand Apple innovate, but we insist they don't change anything."
Yeah, that's a real problem, and that puts Apple in a really tough spot.
Yeah, not really. Apple doesn't care.
Well, I mean, as far as the reactions that they're getting from people, because they're
but Apple doesn't care.
I know.
Apple doesn't care about it. I mean, like, as a matter of fact, let's actually cut straight to that Phil Schiller.
All right. Well, while you look up your Phil Schiller thing, yep. I'm calling product upgrades from Apple, Apple's Kobayashi Maru. Because it's a no-win scenario for them. They can innovate, and they're going to get bagged on for innovating. And if they don't change something, they're going to get bagged on for leaving stuff the way people want.
No, but it's not a no-win situation for Apple, because Apple continues to sell devices.
See, so I'm looking at this in a very narrow scope.
You're looking at it from the standpoint of the echo chamber.
Exactly.
And Apple doesn't care about the echo chamber. And to a large extent, I don't care about the echo chamber.
And
even though I'm part of it on this particular issue.
Yeah, and for the most part, I don't care about the echo chamber either. And full disclosure, my 15-inch MacBook Pro is on order and will be arriving in the next couple weeks. And I'm really excited to get this machine. And I think it's going to be a killer upgrade from my 2012 Retina MacBook Pro.
Did you get 16 gigs of RAM or 16 gigs of RAM?
Oh, I went with 16 gigs of RAM.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's a pro machine. 16 gigs of RAM is not appropriate.
So this is
where I'm contributing to the echo chamber. Yeah. I don't have a problem with Apple ditching all the ports and putting in the four USB-C/Thunderbolt 3 ports.
Yeah, I'm actually expecting, even though I'm going to have to get a couple dongles, but I do that every time I get a new computer. I'm expecting with the four USB-C Thunderbolt 3 ports, that it's actually going to be a lot easier for me to connect the stuff that I need to hook up.
Well, where do you need these things, on mobile or at your desk?
At my desk.
Okay, so then why not actually get a dock, a Thunderbolt 3 dock, like for instance the one that Belkin's going to be sending you, because
yeah, I believe OWC is going to send me one for a comparison too.
My point is, rather than getting dongles, why not get something like a Thunderbolt 3 dock, which I think is extremely useful.
And actually, that's going to be how I handle this computer, or my new computer.
Yes, you don't need the dongles.
I'll need a couple dongles for when I'm on the road.
For what?
I'll need USB-C to USB-A.
Why?
Because I have some USB-A devices that I'll need to plug in, you know, like thumb drives, maybe a microphone on the road.
Okay. All right. Good.
I'll need a video out for when I'm connecting to projectors at places that won't let me do AirPlay to the projector.
But you would have needed that before.
Exactly. So I'm not buying anything new for dongles. I'm buying the exact same dongles that I would get anyhow. And I'll buy a new Ethernet dongle, because there are many times when I'm out traveling where Wi-Fi is not a reasonable choice, and I end up having to wire into someone's network.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
For dongles for me.
For you, of course, you actually tend to carry a lot of stuff with you anyway, whether or not you need it.
That's true. I am so prepared for any connectivity issue when I'm out and about.
But for a lot of people, that's not an issue, and a lot of people might actually have to have dongles with them that they wouldn't otherwise normally have with them. Even still, that's not my problem. I have a lot of empathy with the spirit behind what Mr. Rosbach said. Mm-hmm. That we demand that Apple innovates, and that we demand that they not change anything in the process. That is a thing that Apple fans, especially like the old school fans like us, the diehard fans, the ones who are like, okay, Mac fans, right? We have this problem, and we've seen it, you know, with the iMac, the original iMac, and we've seen it with, you know, with FireWire going. I was cranky about FireWire going. I was cranky as can be about loading up my iPod on USB. Are you kidding me? You know how long it's going to take?
That bothered me.
Yeah,
it did. But at the time, I had slow USB.
Well, all USB was slow, because USB 2 was just really kind of... Apple hadn't really embraced USB 2 all that much. And USB 2, anyway, whatever. So we were cranky about that. We get cranky when Apple takes away ports and functionality, basically. You know, I understand why people were cranky about the headphones, but I don't have a problem with it. The headphone jack on the iPhone 7.
My Lightning to 3.5 millimeter jack is still in the box. I still haven't taken it out.
Oh, I use mine all the time. I use mine all the time because I've got the headphones I'm wearing are headphones that I use with phone calls and headphones that I also use when podcasting. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I get where Mr. Rosbach is coming from, right? Apple, we demand Apple and innovate, but we insist they don't change anything. My problem with the MacBook Pro, the new MacBook Pro, though, is not the changes. It's not the touch bar. It's not the lack of a touch screen. It's that a pro machine, a so-called pro machine, is not upgradable, and that it comes with 16 gigs of RAM maximum. Mm-hmm. And it's the expense for what you're getting. And in particular, where I get extra cranky is that it appears that the reason why 16 gigs of RAM is the max you can have on this is because Apple is concerned about overheating and juice, how much power is used, if these devices had more memory. And my problem there is that if the form factor you have chosen is not suitable for a device that is appropriate for pro users, use a different form factor. It's like Chartier wrote an excellent piece. He wrote an excellent little rant about, it's titled, "Dear Apple, your products are thin enough already. Stop it." Right? I agree with that. I like the pursuit of thin. I do not like the pursuit of thin at the expense of adequate functionality. And 16 gigs of RAM on a modern machine for a pro user is not enough. It's not enough. I don't care if there's a fast SSD in it. It's not enough. 32 is it to, right now, 32 would be the amount of RAM that I would say a pro user should start with.
You know, my assumption before this computer was announced was that I would do a build to order option with 32 gigs of RAM. And when we got all the specs and I knew I couldn't upgrade my RAM, I put the top of the line video card in instead. So I was going to do a build to order option on my computer. It just turns out that what I thought I was going to do for the BTO turned out to be not at all what I originally planned. And I wish I could have 32 gigs of RAM in this computer, but the fact that I can get a computer that is going to be so much more powerful than my 2012 MacBook Pro, or at least give me better performance, is awesome.
Okay, how about longer battery life? Like I don't need, I've heard a lot of people say this, that I don't need it to be thinner, I need it to last longer. I need it to I need it to have a faster processor. I need it to have more RAM. I don't need it thinner. Thinner is not, as a pro user, thinner is not going to help me do my job any better.
You know, had Apple kept the thickness the same, I would have been fine with that.
Well, how about a little bit of compromise? How about thinner, but not as thin? How about this? I've got a wacky, crazy idea. How about as thin as it needs to be to where you could put 32 gigs of RAM in it? How about that? How about as thin as it needs to be where you can have more battery life? Call it all day battery life, all day and all night. How thin does that need to be? That's the thinness that I want.
My guess is for that thinness, your laptop would have gotten thicker.
It's a pretty substantially, it's a much thinner and smaller device than the previous MacBook Pro.
Oh, I know. But what I mean is if Apple increased the battery life to give us that all day use in a MacBook Pro, I think they may have been in a position where they had to make a thicker computer.
How about from 10 hours to 12 hours?
That would be cool.
Yeah, and how thin does that need to be? That's the thinness I want. Again, I'm cool with ditching the ports, man. Forward. I like that Apple pushes those things. I like that. Your mileage may vary out there. Listen, I mean, I've seen some very passionate defenses about how folks need their legacy stuff to work out of the box. I get that. And I respect the fact that you want that. I get that. Personally, I say push forward with the ports, giddy up, especially when there's four of them, like the MacBook with one USB. That seemed weird to me, but fine, whatever. It's like the, you know, Netbook Plus or something, whatever.
I like that. The Netbook Plus.
But you know, with four USB, I don't have a problem with. But more battery, more power, more RAM, not less. Do not sacrifice those things. Not on a pro machine. Don't sacrifice those pro things for the sake of extra thinness. Do it right. That's what I want.
You know, I would love to have been able to sit in on some of the design meetings for the new MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. Because I'm curious if they were looking at keeping the form factor exactly the same as what we have today, meaning the, you know, the silver only option, not the new late 2016 models.
Mm-hmm.
And packing more into that. And at what point did they decide, well, we need to compromise some on that because we really have to do a case redesign? It's been far too long.
Well, you know, Steve was always Steve Jobs. I'm referring to the late Steve Jobs here. Steve Jobs was always like, no, this is what it's going to look like. Now make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I feel like some of what's been happening with the iPhone and the Mac portable line and the Mac Pro for that matter is that it's more like, this is what it's going to look like. Now, what can we do? Right. You know, mm-hmm. so when Steve harnessed that reality distortion field, and by the way, I'm adding Chuck von Rosbach's excellent editorial to our show notes as we speak.
Oh, great. Great.
Because
that's how you roll.
That's how I roll. And, you know, it's a good read. And anyway.
And you're awesome at multitasking.
No, I'm terrible. Absolutely terrible. That's so funny.
I know. It was just great. You're in the middle of a great funny, sentence, dude. And you're like, okay, hold on. Now I'm doing this. Click, 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 click.
Oh my god! All right, Top Ben. That reality distortion field thing that Steve did is that he got people to do things that they felt like they couldn't do, that they said they couldn't do. He did this again and again. Now, sometimes it failed, like the Apple III being fanless, right? The Apple III needed to not be fanless.
It really needed fans. Yep.
But then other times it worked fabulously. And one way or another, he was always pushing things and he was always pushing people, and the products that came out, even when they were flawed, were better than what anyone else in the industry was doing. And I feel like some of that pushing is still happening at Apple, but without the engineering side of things.
Now, keep in mind, I'm not an engineer. So the speculation I'm about to toss out. I know, and considering how many different things I've done in my life, you are probably surprised to hear I have never been a train driver.
Yes, I am.
So anyhow, now we've established I've never been an engineer. I'm wondering if Apple was coming up against some serious design issues, like engineering issues, because of the designs that we have for Intel's processors today. And since the Skylake processors can't support the lower power use RAM chips, that if they did 32 gigs of RAM in this computer, that we would have suddenly had like 3 hours battery life on a brand new computer. And that would have been completely unacceptable. In which case, you know, would Apple have been smart to say something about the limitations of Intel, or would that have sounded like they're trying to make up excuses for why we weren't getting the computer that
we wanted? You know, Apple seldom bitches about a supplier. I can't remember the last time Apple bitched about a supplier. At least
it was AMD. It was Steve Jobs. It was on stage. Remember when they blabbed early about their video cards in the iMac?
Yeah, but he was tense about a behavior, not about the product.
Yeah, that's true.
As a matter of fact, he actually sacrificed the quality of the product on the altar of petulance.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
I say petulance. People didn't cross Steve. And that was one reason why. And it seems like people cross Tim sometimes, but that's a rant for John Keat. We had a thing going here. You and I, we had this thing. What's the thing? What were we talking about?
We were talking about...
You totally derailed me.
No, you derailed you. I just called you out on it. We were talking about the article that you just put into the show notes and
no, we
the
were
problems.
Past that.
Yes,
we were. One way or another, that could actually be the case. Oh no, the thing that we were talking about is whether or not Apple would call Intel out. Apple's not going to call Intel out. Instead, what Apple's going to do is double down on making its own ARM processors that are desktop quality.
I just don't see that happening. Not for a while.
It could happen, man.
Do you think Adobe's going to rewrite Creative Suite again?
Do I think Apple cares?
Yeah, I think Apple does care actually about Keystone apps like that.
Really? You really think so?
Uh-huh.
I think they do. Based on what evidence? Apple has been pissing on pro customers for years.
That's not about pissing on pro customers. That's about having the impression that there are no developers for the Mac. And if you don't have Adobe writing for Apple or for the Mac, then that's a really big problem.
I'm not convinced on that. And yeah, I do think that depending on how much of Adobe's business is coming from the Mac. Of course, the way Apple pisses on its pro customers, I would imagine that Adobe sees less and less of its business be Mac users all the frickin' time.
That's very possible.
Right? You mean...
Right. And so if Apple were to switch processors... What incentive does Adobe have to
rewrite Creative Suite for ARM when the number of pro Mac users is in decline?
Lisa, I think it's in decline. And wants that comment back.
Well, I mean, no, I'm saying that, what am I saying? I know. So what I'm actually trying to say is, even if Apple doesn't switch to ARM, how much incentive is Adobe going to have over the long term?
Oh, okay.
To keep maintaining its Mac. That's not what I said, mind you. It's what I meant to say.
Okay. Hence my smartass comment.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So incentive for continuing to support the Mac at least for now, and so we'll call it long term for now. Is that they actually do get a significant amount of money from Mac users because there are still a lot of Mac designers, Mac Pro users out there, regardless of whether or not people are buying Mac Pros. The professional Mac users that I see most often are using a MacBook Pro as a
Fair
primary
enough.
Computer.
All right. To that end, we got to come back to those Phil Schiller comments that we never got to.
Oh, right, right.
This was in an interview that he did, I think, with the Independent.
Oh, the Independent. Okay.
Yeah. The UK newspaper, London newspaper. He said, certainly been a lot of passionate dialogue and debate about the new MacBook Pro. Many things have impressed people. Some have caused controversy. Hope everyone gets the chance to try it. Blah, blah, blah. It's really a big step forward. Blah, blah, blah. We're brave again. He didn't actually say that, but blah, blah, blah. We
Courageous.
Love the Mac. We love the Mac and are committed to it in both desktop and notebooks as we have ever been. Let's, okay, prove it, sir. Prove it, because you're not proving it. And then he said, and this is the key part, and we are proud to tell you so far our online store has had more orders for the new MacBook Pro than any other Pro notebook before. So there certainly are a lot of people as excited as we are about it. So Apple is, so far...
selling these.
They're selling these things. Now, some of that may simply be pent-up demand.
Sure.
As opposed to people who are just can't wait to dive into the Touch Bar.
But, if it's just pent-up demand, I can't imagine that they would be saying that they're selling more of these than any other laptop they've made.
That's not what he said. He said we had more pre-orders.
Excuse me,
than any other Pro desktop.
So if it was just pent-up demand... I would be surprised if pre-orders topped previous
periods. Well, that's the, are you kidding? That's the nature of pent-up demand.
Well, I know, but there are a lot of Mac buyers out there that are quite happy with their current MacBook Pro.
Mac unit sales have been declined year over year for the last, I think, 3 quarters. Mm-hmm. So the proof to your pudding will be if Mac sales increase again.
Yes, and so we just have to wait and see for that, because right. Neither one of us have a working crystal ball anymore.
Yeah, sorry about that. So, Butterfingers. So listen, we don't have too much more time, but I thought maybe we should actually talk about the Touch Bar since we actually are here. Yeah.
Okay. I'm cautiously optimistic about the Touch Bar. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'm less cautiously optimistic about it because everybody who's had their hands on it has actually said good things about it.
Yeah, and that's why I'm cautiously optimistic, because until I try it out and see what it does for me, then I guess what I'm saying is the Touch Bar to me seems like a very subjective element in the MacBook Pro, and until I see the apps really supporting it in a useful way for me, I don't know how valuable an addition to my computer is going to be. But I'm saying that today, and my computer isn't supposed to arrive till December 5th. So on December 6th or 7th, I might be flipping out over how amazing this is, and it's the coolest thing ever. And I'm totally
fine. That's probably the mere fact that you're
cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, that actually says that you're going to love it, because you're always like, "Yeah, I don't want this," and then you love it. Always, well, every time, every new product Apple announces, you're like, "Yeah," and then you get it. It's like, "Oh my god, I love it!"
Yeah,
that's a quote, by the way. Oh my god, I
love it. Okay, so I did go play with the 13-inch Function Key MacBook Pro.
Yep,
in the Apple Store the other day. Mm-hmm. And one of my big concerns has actually been the keyboard, because it's a variation of the keyboard that's in the MacBook, and yep. I don't like that keyboard.
Yeah, whatever. You'll like it. You'll be fine with it.
I liked this keyboard, the one in the new MacBook Pro. I do like it. Yeah. It feels significantly different to me. So there's that.
There is that. And I still haven't played with one. I should do that. I've got Apple Stores near me.
Yeah, you do.
The interesting thing about the Touch Bar to me is that I think it is the embodiment of Apple's double downing on no toast fridges.
I think you're absolutely right.
I think that and this is how I got there. So do you remember that thing? I wrote about this. We'll have the link in the show notes. Do you remember that thing where I kept noticing how Tim Cook and other Apple executives at the time, they'd always denigrate netbooks, but they never ever denigrated the customer usage that people were. They weren't denigrating the reason why people were buying netbooks. They were only denigrating the actual products.
Yes.
And the way they kept talking about it, I said that Apple is going to compete with netbooks with what I was calling an iPod Super Touch. This was obviously before the iPad was announced. And oh, that's nice. WordPress just logged me out. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I like that. That's really sweet. And that was key to me because the thing was that the analysts in particular, analysts were like, you know, what's your netbook strategy and how are you going to compete with netbooks? And then one analyst, I cannot remember who it is, and so I'm not going to put a name to it because I haven't been able to find it since. But one analyst downgraded Apple because Apple had not articulated how it could compete with netbooks without cannibalizing its own MacBook sales or Mac, its own MacBook product line sales. Mm-hmm. So Apple was being denigrated, being downgraded for a product line that it hadn't announced, i.e. something to compete with a netbook. Mm-hmm. And then its failure to say how that non-existent product line wouldn't cannibalize its other sales. Right. I mean, it was just crazy. And like everybody, like netbooks were the thing, like everybody was selling netbooks. People were buying netbooks and everybody was like, oh, my God, Apple, you've got to have a netbook. And Apple was basically saying netbooks suck. Netbooks offer a terrible experience. They've got terrible screens. They've got terrible keys. They've got terrible power. They've got terrible battery life. We think ultimately people are not going to be satisfied with their netbooks. Apple was consistent about this. And they always pitched this in the way that made it seem like they felt like they could compete with this netbook by offering some kind of larger iOS-based device. And it turns out that that's what Apple did.
And it turns out that... it's been a really good selling product, even though we've seen declining sales over the past few quarters. It's still a really good selling product.
Right. The iPad has done pretty well, and netbooks are gone.
Yeah.
Right. Netbooks are just gone. There are no more netbooks. And I think that we've been seeing the same thing with toaster fridges, where Apple didn't denigrate the desire for people to be able to use touch interfacing, some kind of touch interface, mm-hmm. with a computer. And instead, Apple was denigrating the actual products that were out there, calling them toaster fridges. Mm-hmm. And it really seemed like Apple may have capitulated with the iPad Pro 12.9 inch and the smart keyboard. And mm-hmm. in fact, some of Apple's advertising looked a lot like Microsoft advertising for the Surface.
Which was kind of interesting.
And it seemed like maybe Apple was throwing in that towel, which made it seem like maybe we'd end up having a MacBook of some sort where you could touch the screen. And I think that this touch bar that Apple has introduced is absolutely and positively Apple doubling down on this thing that people don't want to reach out. They don't want to touch their laptops. But being able to use some kind of touch interface would be nice.
I think you're right.
And I think that's what we're seeing.
I think we're going to see touch becoming a bigger part of the horizontal plane on our computers, at least on our Macs.
Without making the screens horizontal.
Right. So we'll still have our vertical screen, and it will be the screen. And then we will have our horizontal plane that has the keyboard, the magic trackpad, and an ever-evolving touch area as well.
Right. Yeah. And despite the Surface Studio.
Right. And I actually know someone that pre-ordered a Surface Studio. I guess I know a couple people, now that I think about it, that pre-ordered Surface Studios. Mm-hmm. And they're very excited about them. Mm-hmm. And one of the people kept asking me, I only have to use this for the art things that I want to do, correct? And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't have to be your computer for everything. They're like, okay, good. Because all I want is the art part of it. And I don't even think they're planning on ever setting up their Surface Studio so it's upright. So I was going to be down in the drawing position.
Well, that makes sense. And to that end, Surface Studio is probably going to be a tremendous device for artists.
Yeah. As long as the apps hold up and the hardware holds up, then, I think the Surface Studio has potential to be a really powerful artistic tool.
Yeah. But I think that if Apple was going to compete with Surface Studio, it wouldn't be with a hybrid MacBook. I think it would just be with an ever larger iPad Pro.
Probably.
like, you know, call it iPad Studio. Can you imagine?
Oh my god.
The internet would just like spontaneously combust if Apple released like a 21-inch iPad Studio. 27-inch. How big is the Surface Studio? 28, yeah. So like a, you know, 27-inch iPad Studio. Oh my, the internet would just combust.
It would be pretty funny to watch. I'm now kind of hoping Apple does use Studio in an iPad name just so we can watch people's eyes bleed. Some days you just want to watch the internet burn.
It's true. Oh my goodness, it's true. All right, you know what else is true?
Yeah, we're out of time.
Yeah, that's the truth.
All right, well, then I need to hit this button right here. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people of the Mac Observer. See, our bandwidth, yeah, it's provided by CatFly. See, the bass is by Boom. Yeah, it's recorded just for TMO. See, and that's all for this week.
Please just stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. No idea where that came from.
No, I'm not surprised.